The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Thursday. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. Interesting day yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to mention this because we've been getting the same comment for over a year and a half, and it really built up in the last couple of days and you know, since especially over the last 48 hours. Since the White House and the president has reversed everything in a week when it comes to shutting down the government if he doesn't get the money for the wall. And this is the whole GoFundMe thing. And I did see yesterday there was one GoFundMe that was at $500,000 earlier yesterday and was up to $1 million. And the goal, I think, I don't know whether it's what's it, $50 million or something like that in the GoFundMe account. You can do whatever you want with your money. I don't tell you what to do with your money, but you're, you know, you're going to be refunded that money sooner or later. What happens? You've got to follow what happens after you give to the GoFundMe account. They do what with the money? What do they do? Everybody is suggesting this, and we have talked about this before, but it's time to talk about it again, because to me, it's just an act of emotional desperation. You have the $50 million, the $100 million. You get $2 billion. What do you do with it? Well, we give it to Congress and demand. What do you mean demand? Your biggest demand is vote them out of office, and they're still in office. That's the biggest demand if you want to do it. The money would still have to go through Congress. Who would have to appropriate it?
Well, here's the thing. If you just raised $2 billion in this effort, first of all, congratulations, and imagine that you could get to that point, which they won't. But if they did, then they would get to a point that would essentially be at the point of a presidential election fundraising effort. A presidential campaign raising $2 billion would be massive.
Yeah, you could. Well, that's a great point. If you're going to do it, but the fact is, if you have said you are raising this money to build the wall, and then you say, okay, we're going to give it to the person that we want to the campaign, that wasn't the original idea of the GoFundMe to begin with.
Well, let's say, you know, some states actually have you could actually donate to the states for certain states. For certain causes, and say that I want this to go to a school or something for the schools.
Something that's being funded currently.
Well, and yes, and that mechanism for transferring those funds, making that donation, has to actually be in place by the state, and in this case, would have to be in place by the federal government. Now, there are ways that you, as an individual, can go, and you can actually pay more than you owe and donate to the federal government if you want to as an individual, but you can't earmark that money.
Right.
There, you have no appropriations power.
Right.
Now, Congress could come in, theoretically, they won't, and they could create something where, well, we're going to have this, we're going to create, this act is going to now create a funding mechanism that gives the people the power for this one purpose in terms of appropriations, and it's the wall, or it's school lunches, or it's whatever. And they could do that, but that's not going to happen.
Right. That would have to go through the Democrats who now have the House.
Yep.
And again, we understand the emotion behind this. It is what I believe one of the major reasons, not the only reason, but one of the major reasons that President Trump won the presidency. And so we understand people being angry about it. The blogs just furious. I mean, social media just furious. Conservatives. And I wonder if this is the point for you know, for Trump. Because one interesting thing is the fact that, you know, you and I asked the question, when the White House started backing off on it with Sarah Huckabee Sanders the other day, that's when you would actually text me, and then we got into that conversation of doing early show prep for a couple of hours, yeah. And the whole Flynn thing happened. And, you know, even at that point, you know, there were people saying, hey, you know, what's going on here? And you and I talked yesterday and said, look, we talked about the Drudge Report headline, which we know the president reads, and we asked the question, is Drudge trying to taunt him? Immediately we went to Ann Coulter because she is one of the leaders of the Build the Wall movement and always has been, and was early behind the president on it. Well, she was attacking him, and you and I said, well, it was going to be interesting to see yesterday morning when the president wakes up whether he reverses himself, because he's done it before when there's a tremendous amount of criticism. I thought it was interesting that just Fox News reporting that it was just a little while after Ann Coulter just blasted the president. Mm. She said, a gutless president her one article was a gutless president in a wallless country. And then she wrote, Trump will just have been a joke presidency who scammed the American people, amused the populace for a while, but will have no legacy whatsoever if he yields on the issue. Within hours of those critical comments, Trump's official Twitter account stopped following Ann Coulter, which means we're not going to fight her. I don't want to see it,
right.
But I'm not going to fight it anymore.
Right.
That, you know, and that I'm not making that as a statement of fact. That's what went through my head. That's the question: did the president? I'm not going to fight for this issue anymore. You and I talked about the tweet that he put out. You know, two nights ago after it, where he was talking about the aesthetic value of the wall, which was the most bizarre tweet that we could imagine. And just at that point also infuriated a lot of conservatives and Republicans. Michelle Malkin said, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to spin it. I wish I could, but I can't. This is a cave. This was a blink. We have had a lot of people blame Congress and the Republicans in Congress. Here's the political problem with that. The Republicans in Congress, even the conservatives with Trump, I don't know anybody else that ran on that on their platform.
Mm.
So it's not something that the Republicans in Congress promised. They did promise that they would fight for more border security, maybe more border agents to fight against sanctuary cities. But the wall was Trump's promise.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, that was his promise. Now, there's a lot of fury out there. I'm not going to speak for anybody else, but I'm not angry because, and you and I talked about this in our pre-show meeting, we said this when he was campaigning, he's not going to get it. He's not going to get a wall that the Mexicans are going to pay for. That isn't ever going to happen. And we said it's a nice piece of rhetoric. It riles up the crowd, but he's not going to get it. We said this back when they finally got the budget passed, what was it, late last year?
Mm-hmm.
When the president, well, no, it was earlier this year. Was it February or March when they got the continuing resolution to go through September? And the president said, this is the last time. This is the last. And we said, no, it's not going to happen. The president's making a promise that he's not going to fulfill. And we were blasted by loyal Trump supporters. We'd absolutely eviscerated for that. And we said, well, no, if he's not going to do it now, when he first is, you know, just his first year of the presidency, if he's not going to do it now and he's not going to do what he needs to do now to get it done, he's not going to do it before election time.
Right.
He will not do it before election time. And it came to be true. And then after election time, when he said, OK, this is the last time I'm going to do it, we said, it's not going to happen. And then when he came out with his extremely blunt statement when he was with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer that he'll take full responsibility for it, and he is proud to shut down the government in order to fund it. Our reaction was, what's your bargaining chip?
Mm-hmm. Where do they need to concede? Right. What do they need to give up to you? What is it that, because they really didn't have anything that they were pushing. Status quo. No. In terms of the spending bill. There was nothing that they were saying, this must be in there, or we will walk away from the table.
Yeah, so we're not upset. Look, I told you during the pre-show meeting that, remember, it was in the campaign. Remember when he held three positions on the H-1B visas, three positions within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And people were furious at us for bringing that up. And so, look, we said this about the new NAFTA when the president was, when we were getting calls, see, he got rid of NAFTA. And we said, well, the name changed. 98% of it is exactly the same. That he is not going to, remember, his promise was to reduce the deficit, to make it equal, because that's the calls we still get from people, to make it equal. We said, that's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. You're eventually, what you're going to find out, if you listen to the show for a long time, you know we said it, the new NAFTA is going to look very much like the old NAFTA, and 98% of it is exactly the same. There are some good points in it, there are some bad points in it. But the only minor things that, you know, outside of the steel tariffs, which again isn't part of the new NAFTA, but what the president took credit for was making cars more expensive to build in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. You've seen the response of the stock market to it. We have seen that the trade deficit is up to the highest levels that it has been. With China and other Western countries. And what the president said he was going to do, I'm glad he didn't get there. Mm-hmm. And I hope some of the things that he put in, like the steel tariffs or whatever, are dropped, you know, very, very soon. But I don't know where the president goes now. I believe with what the Democrats have done now, it's going to be just stagnation. Nothing will get done over the next 2 years. So it's imperative that the president gets the economy going. But what he plans to do, I don't know, because if he couldn't get the wall done, he's not going to get with Republicans. There's no way it's going to get done with the Democrats. It
right.
isn't going to get done.
Right.
And so, what else is the president offering besides judgeships? And like I said before, I'm happy with what this president has accomplished already. I'm happy that we have two Supreme Court justices. I'm happy that corporate tax rates have been reduced. I'm happy that the tax rates were cut for individuals. We're not happy that our taxes went up because of it, but
stupid Republicans. See, Paul Ryan, who has a job now? Trey Gowdy, huh?
So, and so it wouldn't have been the case if Trump wasn't the president.
Yeah.
It would have been completely different. So yeah. I don't look. I disagree with Ann Coulter where she says that, you know, the whole thing is a waste with this president. I don't agree with that at all.
I aren't one issue guys.
No,
and some people are, and that's fine if you want to be one issue person. The problem, I guess, this is the problem with that, and you're seeing it. If your one issue was border control, I guess you underestimated the headwinds because, as you point out, Gary, the Republicans weren't on board, and they weren't on. Well, they weren't making this their issue. The president, I think the risk all along during the 2016 campaign was promising things. We were asking him to get specific on some things, and he was getting too specific on the wall.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we had said that too.
So,
yeah.
You know, making Mexico pay for it. You don't have to say that. actually even promising the wall, you can say there's a difference. You can say what I want, what I believe we should have is a wall. And I'll work to that end. I'm going to need Republicans who will help me. You don't, because look at the energy in his campaign. He raised half as much money as Hillary Clinton and still won. And so when you look at that, the entire dynamic, I guess, surrounding all of that, the only thing you have to, now that's going to be different for reelection, much different. Because now the job's not done, and you've got 4 years behind you, and certain things haven't been accomplished, and you've created doubt in your base. That's different. This is, but going into it, non-politician, a guy from the private sector, he had energy behind him, and he didn't have to make specific promises. And we pointed out time and time again, he's not getting specific, and clearly he didn't have to do that to win. So don't do that on immigration. Say, we need to secure our borders, and that's going to be my mission. Every single day while I'm in office, we're going to secure our borders and keep our people safe. And then you make an effort, you make that, you make the noise every single day. And what you can do in that is, without making those promises, he could have pointed to the Republicans saying, you guys aren't getting it done. I can't fund this myself. And now he could have pointed to the Democrats saying, they're not getting it done. I can't fund this myself. We need people in office on Capitol Hill who can help me get it funded. And he could have done that without making promises.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 of Red Eye. Yeah, so, you know, that's where we are now. This is not a surprise to us. If you're shocked, I'd like to know why.
Right. Well, and now the onus is on the president, the administration, I guess, to find that $5 billion at least. Will they get to $25 billion? It's unlikely. They won't get there in the next 2 years.
Oh, they won't get they won't get to $5 billion in the next 2 years.
Well, here's the thing. Do the math on the so-called appropriations move that Sarah Huckabee Sanders pointed out the other day. Well, that would require each of those secretaries of each of those departments going in and taking from their budgets and saying, instead of buying drones for the Border Patrol, we're going to put that toward the wall. You're not going to get to $5 billion in that kind of measure, which is why she couldn't get specific, which is why she said we're going to ask those secretaries to find the money and didn't say we've worked with them and we believe we found the
money. And what will happen as soon as they find the money? The Democrats in the House that now run the House of Representatives will file a lawsuit that isn't going to be done in the next 2 years.
Right. And here's your forecast for COBRA.
In the Pacific Northwest, another low-pressure center moving inland. The valley rain, mountain snow forecast, especially over southwestern Oregon and up the Cascades, continues for another day. Look to pick up more snow for northwestern Colorado, around Salt Lake, into northern Idaho, up and down I-15 and areas of I-84. Rain on I-5 in Washington and Oregon, not so much for Northern California. The next southern rainmaker taking shape as eastern Texas is getting hit with showers this morning. We've also got the likelihood of severe thunderstorms out for portions of eastern Texas, parts of Arkansas and Louisiana as we move throughout the day. Now, this system will be progressing on to the east and lifting to the north as well, providing showers for most all of the nation east of the Mississippi by Friday. Wraparound cold air on the backside of the front could put some snow into Detroit by Friday. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
They've well-deservedly been called every name in the book. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you'd like to get in. The other thing is, when you come up with something, we have always said that the worst part of this administration, where they're their own enemy, is their messaging, their communication of ideas. Mm-hmm. That is the worst, that by far. It's his communications, which is his responsibility, has harmed him more than anything else out there, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Other people may disagree, but I believe his communications has been horrendous. If you truly want to accomplish something, what you do is you build consensus with your allies. Mm-hmm. You can't do that by attacking everybody every day.
Right.
You can't do that. Was the job, and we said this a long time ago when people said, well, but we like a fighter, and he has to fight everybody. No, he doesn't have to fight everybody. He has to fight the big battles, and not just fight the big battles, but win the big battles. And you do that with a consistent message all the time.
He needs to fight Schumer and Pelosi every day, but in with the Republicans, here's a guy who, by all accounts, walks into a room, his charisma basically captures everybody's attention.
Yep.
So imagine a situation where he's, you know, saying, I need Paul Ryan on this. Call Paul Ryan's office. Help me out, folks, on Twitter. Help me out, folks. The Republicans need to be on board with the wall. Imagine this had happened over the last 2 years again and again and again, where instead of Ann Coulter tweeting every day about the wall, it was Donald Trump. We still don't have a wall done, folks. The Republicans are not helping me. Call them.
But the other thing that you do is understanding the fact of what the numbers are, mm-hmm. and whether you can get that wall or not. So what you do from day one is you build a consensus of allies inside Congress, which are the Republicans. And you go after and you say, what are we going to do about sanctuary cities? How are we going to market this? The American people are with us. 80% of Americans disagree with sanctuary cities. How can we fight this in the courts? What are we going to do here? Number two, all right, probably don't have the votes for the wall right now. All right. But what we need to do is show the American people, because I believe we will need the wall. So what we need to do and what I need from you is what the American people want, which is enforcement of E-Verify and mandating of E-Verify across the country. How do we get that done? And then if we can't get the wall, then I want the marketing of the patches that are there or the weak portions of the wall. I want them reinforced. I want an increasement in Border Patrol, and I want the numbers going in a particular way. And constantly you promote the things that you are doing to get to the wall. And if you have to say every day, I don't have the votes to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I know I don't have the votes to get there. You be honest with the American people across the board. The last thing that you do, as we said from the very beginning, is make promises that you're not going to keep. He's for the last year, I'm going to shut down the government. And every time it came to do it, he didn't shut down the government. Don't go in that direction. Have a consistent message. Organize with your allies. Don't be focusing on every little person who insults you. Don't be spending an hour and a half tweeting every day. Get down to the business and do the job. Do the job of why you were elected president. Get things done. Just don't fight with rhetoric, which a lot of people were happy with. There were tons of people that when we said he shouldn't be doing this, he needs to be messaging in the correct way, they said, no, we like it because he needs to fight with everybody. We said, no, he doesn't. Well, now here we are, 2 years later. Republicans don't have it. Republicans don't have it. And the messaging is what? The messaging that we've gotten out of the White House is they made promises that they never intended from the president. He made promises he never intended on keeping.
Well, and there's it. That's it. You said the other day on the program that, to the Democrats, now he looks like a paper tiger. The bigger threat is that,
yeah, you made that
to
point,
his
yeah.
to his base, he looks like
a paper tiger.
That's the bigger threat. The Democrats, they're going to do what they're going to do anyway. But if his base believes he's a paper tiger, that means they believe he's never going to get anything done. And in making those empty threats, you sound like somebody who's sitting at the drive-thru of a fast food restaurant while saying, I'm going on a hunger strike. Because if people know you're not going to follow through, if they believe you're not going to follow through, there's no reason to show up for you in 2020. If they believe that you are a paper tiger, if they believe that you are making the effort every single day and you're driven, you don't even have to accomplish everything. Again, we've got two Supreme Court justices. Great job. The economy, up until now, and I think still, chugging along. And hopefully that's going to stay the course. But when you hit something and you own something like you did on border control in 2016, coupled with the possibility of a downturn in the economy, well, that spells doom and gloom for 2020.
But we're already getting the response now because people come up with all the, you know, first it was the GoFundMe account. Now it's the whole thing. Well, the president's pulling out of Syria. There's money for the wall.
No,
there's
doesn't
not.
Doesn't work that way.
Doesn't work that way.
You don't take that and put it back and say, well, okay, now we've got this leftover war money. It doesn't work that way.
Right. It doesn't operate that way. Immediately, as we said before, immediately, whether it's the GoFundMe account or this, he will be sued by the House, which is now under Democrat control, for an injunction. Cannot do that. This is money that we appropriated to the Department of Defense, not the Department of Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. So just stop it, folks. Stop it.
Well, it's you can wish it would be that way, but that's not going to make it happen.
No.
The government doesn't work that way. It wasn't set up that way for a reason. Because imagine that you could do that. Imagine that Trump could do that. Well, what the hell happens when the Democrats get in power?
They can shift money wherever they want.
Well, they can bring all. Imagine we were in a war, in a big war, in a foreign nation. Well, we don't want to be in that war. We'll bring everybody home and use that money for whatever.
Well, that would be a president who would do that.
Yes.
Not Congress, because Congress.
No. I'm talking about if they won the House, the Senate, and the White House. And if we were at war and you had that ability to the commander in chief decide, well, we're going to come home, we're going to bring them home, and my friends on Capitol Hill are going to use that money for something else. Well, they could go hog wild when they had all three.
But if Congress agreed to do that, then they could do that. I'm saying the president can't do it alone without congressional approval.
I know that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter whether they have all three branches would be the point.
I know, but if you've got a friendly Congress, that's the point.
That would be legal. Mm-hmm. If you had a friendly Congress, it would be that's my point. They could do it. If they had all three branches of government, you can't do it if you don't have three branches.
They can do it with appropriations. They can do it through appropriations.
Right.
But it doesn't work that way to say that you have leftover war money and we're going to use that money for something else.
No, only if Congress approved you doing that.
That's my point. Imagine if they had the power to do that, they wouldn't. They could. The left could get away with that as well. They don't have the power to do that.
A Democrat president would be able to do that.
Yes.
Let us go to Mark in Albuquerque. Mark, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, guys. Thanks. Yes, exactly. What you guys have been saying, President Trump, I agree with what he has accomplished and what still needs to be accomplished, and especially this border wall. I think if I was President Trump, I would go about it just a little bit different. He already knows that in the next 2 years, coming up to the next election, he's going to have opposition, especially when it comes to the border wall. And I think what if I was him, I would pull a Ronald Reagan, and I would have an evening conference with the American people. If the media would actually cover it, but I would sit down with the American people and explain to them why this border wall is so important, because there's a lot of things not being told to us when it comes to our national security.
He ran a campaign. He ran a campaign on it that got billions of dollars in marketing. The American people, the American people don't need to understand why to build a wall. Well, the American people understand. Wall, keep people out.
Well, yes.
What you're saying is one more speech that the president would give on national television would help this thing along. No, it would not.
Well, I'll tell you, for folks like myself, I understand what's going on with the border law because I've got friends that are in the Border Patrol, both on the Mexican side and up in Canada and it's just as bad up in Canada as it is down in Mexico, but only down in the Mexican side we have a lot more problems.
Okay, but you're talking about the reality of what's going on. The reason that we might not be communicating as well as we should have is you're talking about what the problem is. I'm telling you the politics. The majority of Americans agree with the majority of what President Trump believes when it comes to border security. They may not believe the wall is the number one thing. Many Americans believe, well, it would be the third thing. If you couldn't get this done and this done, take away the incentive for them to come across. Take away welfare. Take away this. Let us work on these kind of things first to stop it. And this is where I think he should have gotten to Congress and build as many allies as you possibly can. But to say that the president, if he gets on TV and gives another speech, that's going to change anything, come on. Really?
Yeah, it's not going to change anything. He couldn't get the Republicans motivated on Capitol Hill. You're not going to get the people motivated. And that goes back to the whole GoFundMe thing. Better than $2 billion would be, I don't know, 100 million signatures. That would be more valuable, because if you talked about, because, and you're not going to get that. I mean, you're at this point, it is not because the messaging is lost. The messaging is gone. It has been the back and forth and empty promises, and that's where you lose the confidence. If the president's losing confidence in his base, well, then the rest of them outside of his base and on the left, they're never going to be there.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Scott in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Scott, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to comment that, President Trump, I'm a big Trump supporter. I love the guy. I think he's good in a lot of ways. But I think that the time has come for him to stand tough. And even in the next 2 years, he needs to be really tough and not sign this bill for the budget. It's better to let the government partially shut down. And it's not just for the wall. He needs to say to Congress, bring me a budget that's balanced, a budget that pays some of the debt, unnecessary spending's thrown out, and just not sign a budget unless it really is good for us.
Yeah, but Trump never promised that.
Well, I know.
Trump talked about in his campaign borrowing more money, that we should borrow more than we're doing right now. He's actually been more for the Democrats think that in the this year they hope, and maybe they'll use this as a bargaining chip to get, with the president, that they want to do more, trillion-dollar infrastructure spending.
And they may do that, but what I'm saying is, with the deep state against him, with the liberal Republicans against him, and the Democrats, most of them against him, he's got one shot. And that, I think, is to go ultra-conservative and say, you know, and a partial shutdown is not going to shut down the government anyway. But if he would be really tough, I think that America would see through that, even if he loses in 2 years.
Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem. So here's the question, Scott, for how long?
For how long?
Yeah.
The partial shutdown?
Yep.
If it were me, I would sit there every day and not sign nothing until they brought me a budget.
The military doesn't get a paycheck through that whole thing. You know that, right?
Well, let's put it this way. They will work it out.
Well, that seems pretty broad. You seem to have confidence where no one else does, including the president.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
I don't want to get out of here without, not, I mean.
We're not leaving right now.
I know. I mean, get out of here over the next couple days with not talking.
We're getting applause in the other room.
Okay, with not talking about it, because it's really important, and again, it confused a ton of people yesterday on top of the White House decision to what it looks like, and unless the president reverses again today, and you never know. He could. Because
look, they don't even have it through the House yet, so
right.
It ain't over till it's over, because, especially with this president.
I mean, with the last second on Friday, the president, I'm just not going to do it now. That could there's a tremendous amount of pressure on him. Remember, when the White House stops following Ann Coulter, because they've said, we've had enough, and he's not fighting for it, will there be a point where the president will just blow and say, wait a minute, I'm not paying attention to anybody, we're going to close down the government? Will
right.
that happen? Mm. Could there's a possibility. But the other thing that was mind-boggling, it doesn't make any sense. The president doesn't make any sense on it. When he said it was like, no, that wasn't the reason, was the complete withdrawal of the 2,000 troops from Syria.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Does that mean also air power is gone?
Right.
The air power to defend the Syrian Democratic Forces, the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces that are currently still fighting ISIS, Russia, and Turkey.
Yes.
And with
an underlying effort to keep Iran at bay as well.
Yes.
I mean,
let me throw Iran in there also, too, because... The president came out and said the only reason we went in there was to get rid of ISIS. No, it wasn't.
No, no, no.
So when did that narrative all of a sudden change? And I just want to read, because he is great at writing things, and our colleague Mark Levin. And we say colleague because he works for our same company, Westwood.
Right, right.
And he wrote something. I think this is on Twitter yesterday. Do not do this, Mr. President. The president has been bold and steadfast in dealing with Iran, our sworn enemy. Iran has slaughtered American troops. It is the largest state sponsor of Islamic terrorism around the world. It threatens the United States with long-range nuclear missiles, which it seeks to acquire. It is attempting to devour Iraq, Yemen, parts of Syria, destabilize Saudi Arabia and even Egypt, and prepares for an all-out war with Israel. Iran's terrorist regime seeks to build a caliphate in the Middle East and beyond. The president has understood this. Yet the stunning announced decision by the administration this morning to immediately withdraw what amounts to 2,000 American personnel in Syria will result in Iran, along with Hezbollah and their sponsor Russia, filling the void and surrendering a significant and important region of the world to our enemies. This is a very, very bad idea. The fact is that the administration's decision to drop the Iran deal and reimpose sanctions on Iran has had an enormously beneficial effect. It has begun to weaken Iran's economy, undermine support for the Islamic fascist regime. But a decision now to leave Syria altogether undermines what has been a brilliant and effective policy up to this point. Syria is not Afghanistan, where we have tried or where we have had tens of thousands of troops and significant casualties over a 15-year period. The U.S. has been very successful in a precisely limited and skillfully executed operation in Syria. To abandon it now is an extremely unwise act, even a provocative act, which will embolden Iran, Hezbollah, and Russia. I would strongly discourage the president from abandoning what has been a significant and crucial achievement up to now and seriously rethink the apparent decision. It's in America's national security interest to hold fast. And I agree with Mark Levin. You made up, I believe it was, I've read so many things here in the past couple of minutes, but you were making some good points. I can't remember what it was. It just went out of my mind.
Well, about having a conversation with the president of Turkey, the president on Syria, I guess you're talking about. But the problem is that if the aesthetics right now are horrible, and the because I don't think it's a coincidence that the president had a conversation with the president of Turkey. Also, he had a conversation with him as well, short conversation at G20, but a phone conversation with him last week.
I know what it was.
Go ahead.
Where you said during the top of the hour, you said, I believe this is a worse decision than Obama pulling out of Iraq.
Oh, yes.
Because,
the void made
because
in
you
Iraq.
Have, you
yes.
have created a vacuum and a void that is even greater than the one in Iraq, because ISIS is not defeated.
Look,
ISIS,
yeah, right.
the United States was a little upset because some of the Syrian Democratic Forces, the Kurdish forces, took some of the troops out of the fight for ISIS just a couple of months ago.
Right.
And the United States was not pleased because they had to use those forces to deter some Turkey and Russian strongholds, mm-hmm. and the United States wasn't happy about it. So the United States clearly knows that ISIS, even though weakened with the support of Iran and with Russia and with Turkey and what they wish to do here, you have opened up a huge vacuum. Plus, the other point of view that the Syrian Defense Forces absolutely rely on American air power.
When you look at the vacuum created in Iraq when Obama decided to pull the troops out of Iraq, that vacuum that was created eventually led to the fall of Mosul. And that went on for 33 months. ISIS took control of Mosul, and that gave them power because they had the control of certain assets and oil to sell to gain power. But that is nothing in comparison to the backing that ISIS will have in that region, because ISIS will do the dirty work of Iran, and ISIS will do essentially along with, again, the threats from Russia and others. They will have much greater power and much greater control in that region. Pulling out will be a much quicker vacuum to be filled, I guess. It will, that region or Syria will essentially then flip. It won't be like the slow build that eventually led to the fall of Mosul in Iraq. And you will not be able to change that dynamic and that momentum without putting troops back. And it won't be 2,000. You're going to have to put a lot more back in Syria, and it will be more dangerous for them to go there in order to accomplish their mission. That's the end of the story. There's not going to be there's not going to be this, I'm sorry, mission accomplished thing. Remember that whole bogus thing when the media was making fun of George W. Bush,
right,
standing there with a mission accomplished banner in the back. But if you're trying to make the claim here that the mission is accomplished, that is false. The mission was not about ISIS. the mission was, I mean, ISIS was doing a lot of the dirty work.
It was a part of it.
Yes, but if you think about it, right. ISIS really was the boots on the ground because of the sponsors behind ISIS, really. And that's where the power is. If you look at the fall of Mosul, ISIS gained power and then retained that power for that 33 months organically by taking over those assets, by controlling those assets, while they were still getting, you know, sponsorship, state sponsorship from countries like Iran. It's nothing like it is in Syria. And there's much more at stake. And you're not going to have a change in that momentum without putting American forces there. So essentially what you're saying is you're giving up Syria. It is a massive mistake.
And which means we'll be back in there again.
Yes.
As we had to after
more dangerous.
After Obama, whether it was Syria or whatever, we're back in again. And that's the thing. And I know, and thanks, that what I read there was from Mark Levin, and I just thought he just wrote it so well. That,
oh, it was,
I mean,
great.
We share so many of the same opinions,
right.
on this particular issue that, and what shocked me was the president, first time I heard it, we just ISIS, that was it. No, it's not. No. Everybody knows that's not true.
Right.
And so if you're going to do it, at least be intellectually honest. If you just want to pull out for whatever reason. I mean, that was even bringing up this conspiracy theories from many conservative blogs that, okay, Trump's trying to, what is it, was it wag the dog?
Mm, yeah, right.
He's trying to make another news item here so people don't pay attention to something else that's going to be huge or to take people's minds off the wall. Or something like that, his wall decision. I don't buy that, but all I know is inside the White House, and I can guarantee you this, I can almost guarantee you that Mattis does not agree with this.
No, I'm absolutely with you on this. I, all day long, I asked myself a million questions. Ed, but the question that kept rising essentially to the top is the most important question. Do you think your defense secretary is, do I think the defense secretary and the president are eye to eye on this? There is absolutely, I'm sorry, there's no way I'd put money on that bet.
And you know, you and I've had many discussions. I think one of the highlights, look, it's still, the jury's still out on North Korea. We have great doubts. We haven't heard a lot about North Korea lately because probably there has been zero progress on it. Like we said all the time, that's why we warned the president, you know, don't be talking about the fact that there's this deal. Because remember, people were calling the show, well, the president got a deal. I remember talking to one of my buddies, and he said, well, I think the president had the whole deal done before he ever went over there to begin with. Well, there's no deal with North Korea.
Right.
But again, if the president in 6 months, or as he said way back when, a year from then, whenever that was, comes out and says, okay, sorry, I was wrong. Mm-hmm. At least he's admitted that's the possibility there. With China, still to be determined with China. But when you talk about the Middle East, when you talk about especially what he did and said, nope, the Iran deal is gone, there's a lot of positives that this president has done with foreign policy.
Israel.
And with Israel, taking the strong stand with...
Bold move.
Extremely bold move. And you sit there and you see what he has done with Syria. You see the way that we have had the limited strikes and said, okay, we are going to use our air power to really keep this as a, you know, as the deterrent from Russia, Turkey, Iran, Hezbollah, ISIS.
Yes.
From knowing that they have to stop at a point.
Yes.
That there may be the skirmishes going on, but the United States is right there to open it up. And I think you made the greatest point, Eric, is when you said, I believe that this will create a bigger void, a bigger vacuum than ISIS coming back into Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, because the argument can be made, this is much more organized and backed
in
Syria.
And that was my point. With Mosul, it was more of an organic approach. Because they captured the assets in Mosul and control of that oil, that gave them the power. When they lost that, they lost power in Mosul and in that region. even though they still had backing from, you know, the countries that have backed them all along, there wasn't that the same effort behind it as you see in Syria. It is clearly more organized in Syria, which is why you have that presence there. Think of it as a cop parked in front of the 7-Eleven, or, you know, you're going to have that presence as a deterrent for your enemies and would-be enemies and to everyone in that region to say, we're here, we're in control, we're managing this very, very closely, and we're not going to move. In fact, I think the bolder move would have been to double the number of troops there. But even without that, you have to maintain pulling all the troops out and bringing them home isn't a sign of victory. It's not mission accomplished.
No.
Because if you believe that, then you believe all the threats in Syria are gone and all the players have conceded to defeat. Please show me where that happened. It didn't. It has not.
Nope.
It's not over. Far from it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on top issues facing commercial drivers. You might be listening to this while safely parked at a truck stop. Or, unfortunately, you're still looking for a place to pull over for the night. If it's the latter, you are probably not alone. Parking ranks number 2 among critical issues for drivers in a 2018 American Transportation Research Institute poll. Searching for a spot elevates nerves, especially with adoption of the ELD mandate, as hours of service violations possibly come into play. If you're in a region where parking is a problem, consider using a mobile app that can help you find, or if necessary, reserve safe parking for the night. Your safety and the security of your cargo are important. Planning ahead helps assure that you and your cargo arrive safely. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Also coming up, we'll talk about, you see the New York Times story on Facebook privacy?
Scary is that?
Where they said they gave Netflix and Spotify the ability to read Facebook users' private messages.
Yeah, the private messages, not posts.
Right, not posts.
Yeah.
That story was out. It still hasn't blown up yet. That's going to blow up any day now.
Well, and it will. I think it will come down to probably I think where they'll start with the user agreement thing with any company and every company. Think about what your device does. So you download an app, and that app needs access to all, needs to be able to control phone calls and text messages.
Right.
It needs to be able to call your mom in the middle of the night. It needs to know your mom's middle name and, hey, what's your sister doing this weekend? All that, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at those permissions, and it's, now you'll go through, you know, several questions. The user agreements for companies like Facebook, you know, where we go, oh, yeah, scroll down, click the checkbox, I agree, get me in, I want to talk to my friends. That's going to probably become more cumbersome. You might even have a lawyer come to your house and actually go through it with you. But it will be, I think they'll start there.
My social media lawyer.
Well, it will be like, it will be, for anyone who's bought a home, it'll be like a mortgage closing. Okay, this says this and this says this. If you agree, then sign here. But I think that's it. I think it will be, I think we're probably moving in that direction in terms of policy. I think, on Capitol Hill, they're not going to stand for this much longer. And I don't think people are comfortable with it. I think the bigger threat to companies like Facebook and other, social media and online companies is that you're going, people aren't going to want to participate as much.
Well, the one thing made by it is that the raises questions whether the Facebook ran afoul of the agreement
exactly.
from 2011 that they
yes.
made with the Federal Trade Commission that says you cannot share user data without explicit permission.
Right. That says we're sharing it with Netflix.
Right. Your private messages.
Yes. Because it you always get this.
I have a feeling that if that was done, it wasn't done in a prominent manner.
Right. You'll always get this, like every once in a while, your credit card. We're updating our privacy policy. And it starts with, we take your privacy very seriously and the whole thing and blah, 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 blah. But they will have to get very specific. Remember the credit card holders' Bill of Rights?
Yes.
And that they passed, and it needs to be bigger letters. Well, wait until they get hold of the Facebook policies in Congress, and they start changing the rules there. It is going to change drastically, likely.
Listening to a very special holiday edition of Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Let's go to George in Martinsburg, West Virginia. George, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
866-90-RED-EYE, 866-907-3339. Less than a week before Christmas, huh?
Yeah.
Mm. You know my advice around Christmas? Don't start partying or partaking too early. Pace yourself.
Well, for me this week, the first 3 days was visiting people that I haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'll see you before the holidays because I'll be gone for actually over the Christmas time I'll be
right.
gone so
right.
people I haven't seen in about a year good friends mm-hmm. and the last 3 days have been doing that
yeah right
so it's actually been extremely busy and now I'm done and I think I'm done with everything I think everything's been sent, everything's been done, all the banana bread's been made,
I'm gonna start my shopping Saturday.
The last two loaves of banana bread delivered yesterday. And so I have really nothing to do.
Right.
Except clean the house. That's about all I have left to do.
Yeah, and you know, here's the thing. My timing on cleaning the floors especially, that's my biggest chore at the house. That's on my list, which I like to do, is that I've got to time it. Now, I have 7 grandkids. Okay? That's practically a schoolroom filled with kids. It's the traffic on the weekends is really heavy. I mean, they're in and out. You know, they go shopping or go to the mall or go to the playground or whatever that grandkids do. I don't know. It's none of my business. But they're in and out all the time. And so my floors, I've got to time it out. You know, I've got to time it out perfectly. Because on Christmas Eve and Christmas morning, you know, you want it to be as clean as possible. Now, all that's going to go away because when they start opening gifts, there's going to be paper everywhere. But I still want a clean floor and a nice-looking floor and the whole thing. So I have to wait, and it's driving me crazy. I won't get to clean until probably late Sunday or early Monday morning. And I just have to wait because otherwise I'm really not doing any good. There's too much traffic around the house between now and then. So I'm pacing myself.
I looked. Doesn't seem to be a lot of bad weather they're forecasting across the nation right now for the Christmas.
Not that I've seen. I think we may have rain on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, at least a chance of it. We haven't really had much of a winter yet.
No, we haven't.
So, well, it's been very mild. I think we're still in the long term forecast right now. There's no real call for a huge drop in temperatures. And I was talking to a friend. I was on the phone with a friend today, and he's in Detroit. And he goes, must be nice. He said, that's a good thing, right? I said, of course. I said, yeah, we love it. I love warm weather. I mean, right after, especially right after the first of the year, I'm ready to get back to summer. So I'm hoping it doesn't ever get too cold this year. So
I just wonder, because 45 or 46 million people over the time, and I think it goes back to earlier this week all the way through January 5th.
Yeah, yeah.
Will be flying.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering how busy it was going to be. Now, I did remember, I told you about Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Now, I had left, you know, we were done. We had, Monday night, Tuesday morning of that Thanksgiving week. We were done, and I caught the plane early that morning.
Right, right.
And I was amazed, because remember we had talked about how many, the number of people that were flying over the Thanksgiving holiday. And right. Again, you know, near a record or was a record. I can't remember precisely what it was. And it was empty.
Mm, yeah.
It was just unbelievably empty. It's getting to be that when I travel during the holidays, it seems to be more empty than on a normal flying day.
But have you been timing it well, though? I mean, Tuesday on that during that week might be a little bit better. But it would be Tuesday would be that Tuesday yeah. would be heavier than a normal Tuesday, though.
I guess I never travel on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
So most of the time, if I'm traveling outside of the year, it's usually just Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, but Wednesday.
So that's a great point.
Yeah,
that's
Wednesday. Point. Let's say Wednesday afternoon of Thanksgiving. I love to watch where they post the, I think it's the L.A. traffic, and you see all the in the evening on Wednesday in L.A., and you see in one direction nothing but red lights, and then in the other direction, of course, the other lane, nothing but white lights. It's the Thanksgiving Day traffic, or the pre-Thanksgiving traffic in L.A. They post that every year. But in the thing for Christmas is it's kind of staggered, because it's the end of the year and we also have New Year's. A lot of people travel at different times. For Thanksgiving, it's a pretty short time, so you have all those people traveling in a tighter group. And you're leaving, when are you leaving? When do you fly?
I fly Sunday morning.
Okay.
Sunday morning, Sunday morning I fly and I come back on Thursday. Now, Thursday shouldn't be busy.
Right.
Say Thursday, from what I heard, Thursday is not going to be a busy day. I'm going to guess Sunday will be, because Monday is Christmas Eve, and Christmas Eve is not a busy day of flying.
Right.
They said, I think the biggest going out will be, I think, this morning and Friday morning is
right.
what I was reading the other day, that
yeah.
those are going to be the real big flights pre-Christmas.
Yeah, I had a lot of friends leaving out actually tonight, Wednesday night. So like several friends getting on planes.
A lot of people probably going over the river and through the woods. Gas prices. It's going to be interesting to see what happens by the time we get into the middle of the Christmas. By the time we come back.
Well, you know
when
what?
We come back to. I wonder what. It's in the 170s here. Mm-hmm. You can find it. Gas
right.
prices.
And what I'm wondering too is that with the fall of oil per barrel. Where is that benchmark right now for West Texas? Where is that, again, that profitability line where they start to, again, because if they start reaching that threshold and it drops too much further, and let's say they're below, and I don't know what that line is. We've heard numbers that are really, really low, and I don't know if that's the case. Someone was reporting $10 or $11 per barrel, everything above that they can make a profit on. I don't know that. I've heard 25, and then I've heard the standard 40.
I've heard all those numbers, too.
Yeah,
I've heard
50, and I don't know where that is.
I've heard 50, 40, 20. It depends on who you're reading.
It depends on the operation.
And a couple of years ago, I was flying on a plane and sat next to a guy who owned an independent drilling firm in West Texas.
Right.
And he'd been around for the longest time.
Right.
I mean, he'd been doing it for, you know, 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
And gone through all the bad times. He told me at that time, and again, I don't know. I'm not in the business.
Right.
He said, we believe we can make a profit at $16 a barrel.
Right.
But I have not heard that. I have not seen that anywhere except for that gentleman telling me that time on the plane. I've seen more figures of probably between 35 and 45 per barrel.
And so that balance of the glut and production, right? Because when you start seeing that slowdown in production here in the U.S., that's a sign, especially if those prices are low, that is a sign that they've reached that threshold. I just don't know where that is. Just curious. And so how low could the gas prices go? In our region right now, it's pretty low.
Well, that's why I said I came to Texas in March of 2000. Could it be less?
Right.
Could it be less than when I came here in March of 2000, which it was in the 160s at that point? Mm. And I'm like, oh, my. We're within 10 cents of that right now. That's unbelievable when you think about it.
Oil at $47 a barrel right now.
You know, that is one of the biggest stories. You and I were talking about the biggest stories of the day, and I completely spaced that one out.
Yeah.
But you think about 2018, what will get lost in 2018 is the fact that America again became the world's largest producer of oil.
Right.
And maybe, you know, we probably bring that up a lot, but we were tortured by the peak oil people, I don't know, for probably from 2000 to 2010.
Maybe? Yeah, because I think at the height of it, it was in the summer of 2008 when oil was at its highest, $147 a barrel. Because that's what they were using as that excuse. See, they're running out. Supply is too low.
And the doomsdayers were all over the place. Mm-hmm.
Well, and then late that year in 2008, oil fell. But you look at the dynamics now and essentially the fundamentals, the principles at work, and it really is about that glut. And it is about that standoff with the OPEC member nations and what they're going to do as opposed to what's going on with technology and domestic production. And domestic production has been increasing and rising pretty steadily. And I wonder again how long we can sustain that with oil dropping, because at some point when it becomes less than profitable, then production will slow greatly, including domestic. So I do wonder about that. But $47 a barrel, wow.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. Hey, Sarah Curley. I'm Gary McNamara. I'm sorry. I had my headphones down, and I started hearing that music, and I...
Synthesizer, man.
Whatever it was, I was like, oh...
It's the Christmas synthesizer,
I'm
man.
I'm like, that can't be our bumper music, I started thinking.
It's me with one finger on the synthesizer,
it's
man.
Like, what?
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
We've talked about a few things. Syria, the wall... Mm-hmm. And we had mentioned earlier, because somebody brought this up, it was over a year ago, and said we should have a GoFundMe account. And we said way back then, and then we checked it again a few months ago and said, yeah, there are still GoFundMe accounts out there. And we had found one with only $50. Well, this really has got the ball rolling, and I did see one that's up to $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, as we said, stop wasting your money and wasting your time. You're going to get a refund on it.
Well,
because you can raise all the money in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Money being the money is not the problem.
Because, for example, if you raise $2.1 billion, that would equal what Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump raised combined
right.
in 2016.
And so, but what would you do with that money? So you've raised the money. It's in a GoFundMe account. What do you do? We give it to Congress and, okay, and
you can't write a check to Trump. There's no mechanism to,
right.
to facilitate that.
Yes. His foundation no longer exists.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. He's promised to dissolve that.
Can't write a check to the president to build the wall. What do you do with the money? Well, we give it to Congress and what?
You can't.
How do you give it to you? Could I guess you could
leave it on the steps of Capitol Hill?
I leave it on the steps of you still need Congress to pass the appropriation. It's not a money thing. The money is there. The will to spend the money is not there in Congress.
Individuals and groups don't have the power to appropriate money. If they did, you would have corporations all day long.
But the story
coming
out there,
up with money to get their way.
Rasmussen reports nationwide poll shows that 1 in 3 Republicans would be willing to pitch in to pay for a wall on the U.S. southern border with Mexico if Congress fails to give President Donald Trump the $5 billion he has asked Congress to approve.
Listen, that's very patriotic. What it represents
yes.
is great. But the only power that you have in this case is to put pressure on Congress to fund it for the president. That's the power you have. And, of course, the power to vote. But right now, there's not an election, so it's the power to put the pressure on Congress. It's not going to change Congress. Because what you unfortunately have working against you is the other part of this country that are putting pressure on Congress to tear down all the border walls, the fences, the border posts that we have right now, the checkpoints that we have. We call them checkpoints. The crossing points of the borders. They want those gone. So, again, valiant effort, very patriotic, no doubt, but there's really no way to make that happen with just the money.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. How's everybody doing?
I don't know.
I guess we can say it. Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year. We're now in that in that segment of the year because we're less than a week out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you ready for this?
Okay,
let's play a couple of audio cuts from Paul Ryan's goodbye speech.
All right, yeah,
here we go.
Yeah.
For some reason,
no. Not playing?
Not playing.
All right.
I see it as a labor of love. Yes, you can make a career out of criticism. You can deal from that deck all day long. Many people do, and I certainly don't begrudge them that. It seems like an easy living. But well done is always, always a better pursuit than well said, isn't it? With an incentive structure that preys on people's fears and algorithms that play on anger, outrage has become a brand. And as with anything that gets marketed, it gets scaled up. It becomes more industrialized, more cold, more unfeeling. And that's the thing. For all the noise, there is actually less passion, less energy. The people have spoken. And soon the House will become the care of a new majority and what I know will be a spirited Republican minority. I wish the next leaders well.
Paul Ryan getting blasted, also being complimented by many people out there. Mm-hmm. He seemed to take a hit at social media and what's going on, today on social media and took a shot at that. let's take that all out of it and let's just judge Paul Ryan himself. Paul Ryan, that we have mentioned before, that came in as somebody who not only believed in tax cuts, but especially spending cuts, believed that the federal government spent too much money. He was the one that came up during the 2012 election cycle, before that, back in 2011 and early 2012, with his tax plan that would reduce, that would have balanced the budget. I believe it would have been in 30 years. And he was considered a radical by the left. Paul Ryan may not like it. Others may believe it is unfair. I do not, but I believe that Paul Ryan's legacy in the minds of conservatives is that when he had the chance to fight to cut the budget, he ran the other way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe I'm being unfair by saying that. We supported Paul Ryan when he talked about the, you know, cutting government spending. But when he got into the leadership role, even when, remember, he wouldn't bring back the John Boehner deal, which was how really the swamp was created,
mm-hmm.
because it was out of control spending. He goes, look, that was his deal with the Congress. I'm now Speaker, and I'm going to move on from that particular point. And a lot of conservatives said, okay, we'll see what you do on your own. Well, on his own, and over the last 2 years especially, he has presided in good times over a huge increase in government spending. You can paint it any way that you want. You can give every excuse in the world. But if we're going to say for Donald Trump, look, you made this promise, this is what you were about, the wall, then you can't look at Paul Ryan and say, well, he gets a pass because Trump was president. No, if you stand for something, you stand for something. And you can't sit there and say, well, in the Democratic process, sorry, you're in a leadership position. And you should have looked at the budgets that were passed over the last couple of years and say, this is outrageous and unacceptable, and I won't let it get to the floor. Well, the government has to run. Well, then fine. Don't take the position as Speaker of the House.
Well, and that's, I think, it's funny because the introduction was done by Trey Gowdy, and I watched it as it was happening at speaker.gov, and Trey Gowdy basically pointed out that, you know, nobody wants that job as a speaker, and that Ryan didn't want the job as speaker. Well, at some point you took it. So either take the job and do the job or don't take it. It's one or the other. And when you take the job, unlike your predecessor, you need to get messy sometimes. And you need to certainly stand your ground on what you, well, what people thought you believed. Because as Trey Gowdy pointed out, Paul Ryan is a policy guy. Well, when you talk about that policy and you believe in certain policy, you should lead toward that effort without flinching. And he did. He flinched a number of times. It was as if he took the job and saying, well, I'm just going to keep the seat warm.
Yeah, you were. I was thinking the same thing. You're not Kramer and Seinfeld.
Right.
You're not seat filling.
Right. Exactly.
At the Tonys.
Yes. Right. It is. You're there for a reason. So right. I understand not wanting the job. I understand that. Because Trey Gowdy talked. He told the story. He said, you know, if you want to find Paul Ryan any weekday morning between 6 and 7 a.m., you'll find him in the gym. And he's leading House members from both sides of the aisle in a workout. And I was there one morning, and I asked him, do you think you'll ever be our speaker? Do you think you would want to be Speaker of the House? He says, well, you know, Trey, I love you. I love all you guys, but I don't love you enough to become Speaker, to want to take that role. Well, we know it wasn't a secret that he was reluctant in taking that role. But when you take it, you must know that you take it as a leader. You don't take it as a seat filler. don't take it as a Kramer. You've got to take it, and you've got to lead.
Then he should have been honest from the beginning and said, look, not only do I not want the job, but whatever budget, no matter how high it is and no matter how high it skyrockets, the deficit and the debt, I'm going to sign the bill because I really don't want the job, and I'm just filling the seat.
Right.
You know, I'm so sick and tired. Oh, I don't like the job, and therefore I'm just the seat filler, and therefore I did the best that I could, which wasn't really doing the best that I could, and because I didn't want the job, that justifies me not doing the job that people thought I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, stop being a baby.
Well, what was interesting is Trey Gowdy also told another story saying, you know, I was being pressured by other members of Congress to not sign any more CRs, continuing resolutions. So I spoke to Paul Ryan about that. Paul Ryan said, give me their numbers, I'll call them. And I thought, wow, that's a perfect story to describe the policy of Paul Ryan as Speaker of the House. That's a great thank you, Trey Gowdy, for spelling out exactly who he was as Speaker.
Well, and the part of it when he was talking about social media and that was he channeling the Malay speech from Jimmy Carter?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, vicious debate has always gone on. Look, Eric, I've done this for 30 years. This is my 30th year of talk radio. I started in 1989, so I'm into my 30th.
Gary McNamara.
I will tell you that the only thing that's changed is the access to information. You know, how quickly we can get information. But as to the, you know, hate mail, whatever, really, seriously, I know you haven't been in as many years. I mean, you're getting closer. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a few years behind me in talk radio, but it's, to me, it really hasn't changed much. We deal with anger and passion all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I hear that, it's almost as if it's an excuse. Why do you have to bring that up? You know, it's part of this constitutional republic was created so people could do that. So when people do that, if I'm part of society or I'm part of the media or I'm part of the government, I'm not going to complain about it. That's what is expected. If that wasn't happening, I would be surprised. It's like you and I have talked about the fact, some of these talk radio hosts that we knew that call themselves Republicans or conservative who gave up the ship once Trump was elected because it just got to be too much. The anger, the fury. Well, what the hell business did you choose? If you didn't like that, you should have gone into, being at one of the music stations out there and talking about Lady Gaga and what's his name in the movie?
Yeah, Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper. You could be doing that.
Yeah, Stars Born.
I get into talk radio and now people are angry and furious.
It's really? Always been the case.
Wow. You talk the issues every day. And then all of a sudden, what? You were having a smooth ride and one day people disagreed with you and you got all upset? That's an everyday happening here. It's supposed to happen.
If I walked out every time I got a negative email, I'd get a lot more exercise.
I really do believe, as they say, once you get to whether you're Republican or Democrat,
mm-hmm.
that your view of the world changes. It's sort of like the media whose infrastructure is in New York and Washington, and they're all around the same group of people and the same culture and the same mentality all the time. They start, saying stupid things. Hmm. You know, and they start bringing up stupid concepts. Oh, it's so mean out there. It's so this. Welcome to the real world.
Yeah, it is, again, because it goes back to the, Boehner moment. I don't like Messi.
Oh,
yeah.
Geez.
Great. Hey, what's your new job? Working for a tobacco company.
Selling pot.
I don't like Messi.
Promoting pot.
Yes. You think pot makes him cry? I bet it does. Wasn't that a John Denver song, Getting High Makes Me Cry? Wasn't it? And if not, why not? Never mind.
Watch. Paul Ryan joins John Boehner now in the promotion of marijuana. Yeah. Hey, by the way, I saw that I forgot to talk about this. I guess Cuomo in New York now. What? Time for recreational marijuana in New York.
Everybody that smokes pot in New York. Yeah, we're already on that. We're already doing that.
Hey, if that happens, you mm-hmm. never know. Mm. I might head back to Buffalo and never come back.
I keep missing my plane, man. What happened?
Eric was gone for, or Gary, here's Eric on the air. Gary was gone for one day. He hasn't returned yet. I called him on the phone. There were a lot of dudes.
Dude. Hey, man, where are you? I can hear your voice, but I can't see you. I'm on the phone. What? What do you mean by that, man? Why are you getting all defensive? Keep missing my plane, man.
I still have to do that someday. I just haven't been in the States.
What?
That have it.
Walk into a dispensary?
Just walk in to see what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be, I'd be going looking around going, oh, no, the camera's
around
me.
You know what I would do, though, if I owned a dispensary? What? You know how the Oval Office, the door basically kind of just folds into the wall. It has the same molding as the wall and paint. All of my doors would essentially disappear into the walls. And I would just stand there at the register and watch them try and find the door every day. That would be my recreational activity.
It would be your recreation from recreational marijuana.
Yeah, well, I would just, because I'm just going to, okay. Hey, man, I can't get out of here. Would you like to buy some more?
But that happened fast in New York.
Yeah. What was it? It wasn't too long ago, several years ago, I don't know, just a few years ago, where they were looking at that, and then the legislature was saying, well, no. And they were very strict on the medicinal marijuana. I mean, it was very limited. And now it's like, no problem. I mean, the tide is turning. I'll tell you, the tide is turning. They're looking in the next legislative. We have a part-time legislature here in our state, but in their next legislative session, they're looking, the Republicans have it on their list to, lower the, I guess, penalty for possession of small amounts of marijuana. I think below an ounce or something. It would be, I guess, a citation so they don't have a bunch of people sitting in jail and have a process. It would be a civil penalty or a fine or something.
Or the death penalty as we currently have.
Well, it's going to go
small amounts.
It's going to go over. Yeah, exactly. It's going to go there's the difference, because over an ounce would be death penalty. Under an ounce, just a ticket.
Yeah, I just saw, though, I forgot to bring up the story earlier, but when I saw it, I was like, oh, wow, that happened pretty quick in New York, where all of a sudden, all right, time for recreational marijuana.
Okay, so here's my question. So let's say we get to all 57 states, and it's legalized everywhere in each state. That's time for Congress, I guess, at that point. They're going to have to make a decision.
Yeah, they would at that point, would they not?
Yeah. I mean, I think once you get to 30 or 40 states, they're going to have to.
Before we die?
Yes.
Before I die.
Well, okay. Before my life expectancy is reached. Let's put it that way.
You believe you'll see it federal?
I think they'll have to, because I think once they get to 40 states, they'll probably do it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Well, Senator Jeff Flake, a nice bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
You already did?
Nah.
Co-sponsored, introduced a carbon tax bill to combat climate change just days before the current end of the session of Congress.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when the real people come out and they don't have to worry about getting elected. You know, we didn't talk about McSally getting the seat. John Kyle was, I guess, in for a few months after John McCain died, but the governor of Arizona giving that seat to McSally. But, yeah. Way to go, Jeff Flake.
Wait to hear what this is.
For Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
In the Pacific Northwest, another low-pressure center moving inland. The valley rain, mountain snow forecast, especially over southwestern Oregon and up the Cascades, continues for another day. Look to pick up more snow for northwestern Colorado, around Salt Lake, into northern Idaho, up and down I-15 and areas of I-84. Rain on I-5 in Washington and Oregon, not so much for Northern California. The next southern rainmaker taking shape as eastern Texas is getting hit with showers this morning. We've also got the likelihood of severe thunderstorms out for portions of eastern Texas, parts of Arkansas and Louisiana as we move throughout the day. Now, this system will be progressing on to the east and lifting to the north as well, providing showers for most all of the nation east of the Mississippi by Friday. Wraparound cold air on the backside of the front could put some snow into Detroit by Friday. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Winter Wonderland. Gary and Eric on Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary. He's Eric. 866-90-RED-EYE. I guess tomorrow I'll have to tell my story, don't I?
What's that?
In the shortened form.
The guillotine story?
Yeah, the best Christmas gift I ever got. Yeah. I was thinking about that today.
Yeah. Gary got a real guillotine and accidentally... Well, used it on a friend when he was six. Listen, we'll just tell the story tomorrow. Don't be too horrified.
Well, hey, you know what I like, though? Have you seen it went viral around Thanksgiving on Facebook, the old toy gun commercials?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I had a conversation with a friend of mine, and we were talking about that research group that does consumer research.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a research that, okay, if you buy a Nerf product this year to give to someone, you're more likely to be a Republican, like 38%, as opposed to 26% Democrats plan to buy a Nerf product. Okay, nothing against Nerf. I guess it's because I'm an older guy, and I have one Nerf product, which, by the way, is a really good product. And it's not the spongy material that you think of, you know, from back in the day. It's actually a rubber frisbee they make for dogs that I buy a bunch of them because my dog likes to chew. And so, but I thought of that, and I thought, I was talking to my friend, but there are, and he says, is it about, you know, Democrat versus Republican on Nerf, you think? And I said, I don't know. I said, but... I mean, because I don't know that that's the case.
I don't know.
Well, okay. It could be generational. There could be some other things to it. Or, I don't know, was in certain areas of the country, was Nerf not as popular? You know, like Tim Hortons. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a cultural thing because of where you live. Well, then I said, but in today's world, in 2018, if you go out and you buy a toy gun for your 4 or 5 year old child or grandchild, you're probably, if you don't have a problem with that, there's a decent chance you lean right at the very least.
Well, when you see it, and there are all the commercials that were being played when I was growing up in the 60s, mm-hmm. all of them.
Yeah.
And there's like the, you know, the machine gun. Put it in semi-automatic mode. Boom, 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 boom. And then full automatic. Mm-hmm. And then they go to this other one about this handgun. Mm-hmm. And this handgun, but the machine gun, you can actually put it into, I think it's cap automatic, where you remember the caps?
Oh, that make real sound.
And it was going, bah, 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 bah. And then they went to the handgun that was a cap handgun, and they said, not only is it a great toy, but it's so realistic. Like, oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of today's mentality compared to back then. And nobody thought about it. Why? Because it was a fantasy world.
Because it was a toy.
It was a toy. It was a fantasy world. I remember my brother and I, when my father got us the Dick Tracy machine guns, because Dick Tracy was huge,
mm-hmm.
we ran around the house that whole day.
Mm-hmm.
And I still remember, and I was young, when my father first put a pistol, a real firearm, in my hands mm-hmm. to shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
We knew the difference.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We made sure that our kids learned at a very young age.
We knew the difference. We played with toy guns.
Mm-hmm.
And when my father, and I don't know how old I was when he took me out target shooting, maybe 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was about respect for that firearm. Here's the thing. He didn't have to tell me about respect for firearms, even at that age.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the ability. A part of me, I remember it not, because I still remember where we went out shooting
mm-hmm.
near my aunt's house, who lived in a totally rural area. I remember that there was fear.
Mm-hmm.
There was a healthy fear, respect for it. You know, my father was giving me a gun to shoot at a rural, basically, pistol range.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it. I remember the feeling at that moment. There was a feeling of accomplishment once, and then we did some target shooting and you were able to hit the target.
Right.
There was a sense of an accomplishment. But the sense of accomplishment actually was not shooting the gun. It was being able to operate it correctly, even at 9 years of age, and handle that responsibility, that my father trusted me with that responsibility to handle a firearm, something that I was well aware of at that age could kill someone.
Yes.
The fact that I could have, at 9 years old, ran back and grabbed the Tommy gun and pretend to be shooting my brother had no effect mm-hmm. on that young mind when I had a real gun in my hand.
Well, it essentially, if you think about it, the toy version in our generation was a toy gun version was another version of tag, right? Boom, or, you know, you're it, essentially. Mm-hmm. You're out. I got you. You're out. Then they moved on to paintball. I don't know why, because things needed to be more colorful. I have no idea. But it became because, all right, there's a paintball. By the way, those things hurt. There's a paintball, and then all of a sudden you're marked, and you're clearly out. We needed to, because if you remember the whole thing with friends, when I lived in San Antonio, we had BB gun wars. I'm not saying we were smart kids. I'm not trying to make that claim.
Well, we didn't do that.
Yeah, we did. We did. I remember. And
we did slingshots.
Well, but here's the thing:
at each other
there were BB guns, and then there were pellet guns.
Okay.
Now, when the pellet guns started coming out, and they were higher powered, and the pellets were shaped differently than the BBs.
The CO2 cartridges?
Some of them, yes. Okay. When that started to hit, we were like, okay, we definitely can't do that with this. It was kind of a short-lived experiment, well, due to injuries mainly, the whole BB gun wars. And it was because we knew we weren't going to put an eye out with that thing. But when I walked in the house and I had one embedded into my forehead, now it didn't break the skin because I have a thick skull. I walked in, but I thought it was the coolest thing. And I thought, man, this is going to be there forever. I'm going to be able to tell this story forever. And I walked in and I wanted to go look at it in the mirror, you know, because all my buddies were telling me, man, it's stuck in your head. So I walked inside. I walk inside and there it is. And of course, I have to walk past my mom. What's that on your head? Nothing. What's that on? What is that on your head? It's a BB. How did that happen? I don't know. Magically? But it was a different, it was, it, we still never believed we could hurt each other. But there was a point when, and I think it was that point. I think it was my point. When we thought, okay, yeah, we've pushed it as far as we need to push it. Because our bigger brothers had the pellet guns. And that would have been the next step in this whole little experiment. And we knew we couldn't go that far because of the shape of the ammunition and also the power of those guns. But as kids, the one thing I learned very quickly was, yes, that power, that very real power that you were holding in that real gun. And in my case, it was a rifle. And I knew I was going to have the power to take a life, whether it was hunting, you know, or in some kind of horrible accident, you know, hurt or even worse, a human. And I was nervous about it. Still today, when I'm on the range, I don't know if nervous is the right word, but I am. My OCD goes through the roof.
Hyper aware.
It is beyond hyper aware.
Right.
A few weeks ago at the range, it was very, very windy. We were having problems with the paper targets staying on. And so we had to, you know, we often had to stop and everybody had to stop. And collectively, everybody out there was saying, okay, stop. And we'd go out and we'd help each other fix targets and the whole thing, secure those targets and then go back and then say, okay, all clear. But I mean, it is a very deliberate and safe practice if you have that respect, and you should always have that respect. And lawful gun owners, and whether it's a license to carry in Texas or conceal and carry in other states or open carry or whatever it is, take that very seriously. And anecdotally, I've never seen anyone who does not. It doesn't mean there are people out there that are there aren't people out there that are careless. There are plenty of people in this world that are careless, and that does happen. But you know, you look at the culture we're in and what essentially, I guess, became, oh, my gosh, we can't teach our kids to be comfortable around guns. That was never the case. That was never the case. I was comfortable around a toy, knowing full well it was a toy. The biggest threat, remember the threat from the caps in the Western-style guns was that, well, you would pinch your finger if you let the hammer off or something like that. Or if you went to pull the string of paper caps, if you had those,
yes,
out, and if the cap had just been fired, if it just fired, you would feel a little bit of a warmth, a burn, a little bit of a burn. Not enough to injure you, but, you know, that was the biggest threat, essentially. Unless somebody threw a toy gun at you, you were likely to not be seriously injured.
We actually got bored with the cap guns so quickly that we would just take a hammer to the caps.
That was exactly what I tried to do. A buddy of mine had this massive, well, not massive, but it was a huge ball bearing. It was a huge ball bearing from something industrial that his dad had done at one point. And we were seeing if we could roll it over. We would flatten out the roll of caps because they came in this paper roll, essentially.
Right.
And so you would flatten it out, and we were trying to see if we could have them rapid fire by rolling this massive, you know, steel ball over them, but it didn't work.
It's funny how quickly we got, because you couldn't see it, and it was like, no, I'm gonna be able to hit this with a hammer. And then that got boring, so it was a magnifying glass. Can I set one off with the sun and a magnifying glass?
Right. Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever told you, but I've always been for banning the CO2 pellet guns.
Yes, because of the CO2?
Climate change.
Oh, yes, of course. It's harmful to the environment. Yeah, I mean, it's just... Look, I think people should be left alone to teach their own values to their kids, but it is ridiculous when we say that we should not have these in society. I can parent my kids and my grandkids. I don't parent my grandkids. Their parents do. But, I mean, I can teach them lessons and values and also know that they are very fully aware, as we were with our kids and are with our grandkids, of respecting a real weapon and knowing the difference between the two and again the fact that there's nothing harmful about a toy.
But if you get to see it, if you see that the video appears on either your Twitter feed or your Facebook feed, because it has really since Thanksgiving,
right?
You've got to watch the video, because you sit there by about 2-3 minutes in, you're like, these could never run today.
And by the way, you had the Dick Tracy gun because that was the good guy.
Yes.
If you were wearing one of the Western holsters, it's because you were going to have a shootout with the bad guy. You were the good guy. In today's world, they started making them look realistic, and kids wanted to look like bad guys. Well, sorry, that's not taught by gun companies. That's taught by cultures and, well, frankly, parents.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Thanks so much for being here this morning.
Yeah, we're heading into the big Christmas weekend tomorrow. I'm going to start my shopping, I think, probably Monday afternoon. I'm thinking about it.
Coming up on the top of the hour, Senator Jeff Flake. We were talking about the CO2 pellet gun, and somebody's going to take it seriously when I said I think they all should be banned because of climate change. But Senator Jeff Flake signing on his goodbye, a climate change tax.
Okay.
See what the Democrats are trying to do here, or the left's trying to do?
What's that?
We're going to have a climate change tax. We're going to rebate it all back to the taxpayer in order to make it more palatable. We're going to raise the cost. We're going to charge all businesses, so we're going to raise the cost of everything, but we're going to rebate it through tax rebates all back to the taxpayer.
That's redistribution. That's wealth redistribution.
Well, are you going to do it by the people that actually use the energy, or equally to everyone? Well, how are you going to do this?
Because if you take that money from corporations and give it to the taxpayer, then you're telling us there's no money going to the whole global warming thing, which tells me it's just about wealth redistribution.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.